Chapter 5. Along with the rest of his company, Alpharius stood to attention in one of the primary cargo bays. The order had gone out across the Avenger for all squads and crews to make ready for an inspection. In full armor, bearing their weapons, the Raven Guard had turned out en masse, filling the flight bays, storage areas, gun decks, and mess chambers with rank upon rank of warriors. The Alpha Legionnaire waited patiently while an officer in the livery of the Imperial Fists, introduced as Captain Norris, prowled between the ranks, checking every legionary in turn. Every now and then he would ask a question, probing for some hint that the Raven Guard were traitors.
"Do they think the rebels are just going to turn up and ask to see the Emperor?"
muttered Doryl to his left.
"Maybe they think we're on some kind of scouting mission for Horus,"
replied Ordin, standing on Alpharius's right.
"They probably have no idea who is friend and foe."
"It'd be a pretty brazen traitor to turn up with just one battle barge," said Doryl. "If that's Horus's strategy, this'll be over in a year. I don't know why the Primarch is allowing this."
"Because he has nothing to hide," said Alpharius. "Every legion is under suspicion at the moment, and nobody, least of all Dorne, is going to take anyone's loyalty for granted."
"Well, I've got a scar on my left arm from a World Eater chain axe if this jumped-up policeman wants any proof of my loyalty," said Ordin.
"Quiet!"
snapped Sergeant Dorr. They fell silent as Captain Norris continued his tour through the lines. Alpharius stayed calm as the captain approached from the left and stopped in front of him. His helmet was on his belt, leaving him fully exposed to the scrutiny of the others. But there was nothing outward that would betray his true identity. He met the Imperial Fist's gaze with an emotionless stare as the captain eyed him closely. There were no questions. Norris moved on further down the line. Alpharius quashed the urge to sigh with relief, realizing how tense he had become, even though he had kept his exterior utterly placid. Soon enough, the order to disperse was given, and the company broke into squads.
"What's next, Sergeant?"
Ordin asked as they filed out of the chamber.
"The Imperial Palace," replied Dorr, with a grin.
Despite finding no hint of suspicious activity on his inspection, Captain Norris insisted that his orders required the Imperial Fist's contingent to remain aboard the Avenger until it reached Terra. Not wishing to create more problems, Korax agreed, placing him under the stewardship of Bran. As ship's captain, it was his responsibility to accommodate the visitor, and Bran did his best to be helpful and cordial, if not outright friendly. Norris did not make the task any easier. He was a tight-lipped warrior, monosyllabic for much of the time, unwilling to shake a certain distrust of his hosts. The journey from the translation point to Terra would take 11 days, during which time Norris was invited by the Primarch to brief him and his command council on the current intelligence regarding Horus and the situation at Istvan. They convened in the command chamber beside the Strategium, Korax choosing to stand while the others were sat around the table. As a courtesy, Norris had brought over some personal stores from his strike cruiser before dispatching it to continue on patrol, and so there were several bottles of wine, plates of fresh meat and bowls of ripe fruit for the council to enjoy. Bran would have been grateful for the gesture had it not been performed in a manner that indicated Norris believed it his honour-bound duty to offer this gift, rather than acting out of genuine comradeship for his fellow legionaries. For all that, the commander showed no hesitation in consuming the fresh provisions with gusto, as did the other commanders.
"You must be aware that I am not privy to high levels of intelligence," Norris began, casting a worried glance at Korax, who stood a little apart from the rest of them, looming over the group like a shadowy statue.
"Just tell us what you already know," said the Primarch.
"Details are scarce, as you might expect," said the Imperial Fist.
His uncertainty continued, either from genuine lack of knowledge or reluctance to share what he knew with the Raven Guard.
"Some of our legion were sent to Istvan and are still unaccounted for. The rest are garrisoning Terra and dealing with the Martian situation."
"What situation?" said Solaro. "What is happening on Mars?"
"Insurrection bordering on civil war," replied the captain with a sour expression. "It seems Horus has allies within the Mechanicum, as well as the Legiones Astartes and Imperial Army."
"There is fighting on Mars?"
Agapito's incredulity was betrayed by his tone.
"That puts the traitors within striking distance of Terra already."
"I expected as much,"
said Korax, leaning forward to pick up a wine bottle in his giant hand. He delicately poured himself a glass of red, the crystal goblet seeming tiny in his fingers as he raised it to his lips.
Horus would not be able to launch a war against the Imperium without support from the Tech Priests. That it reaches as far as Mars is worrying, but not a revelation.
Korax sipped his drink and nodded to Norris to continue. The captain cleared his throat and looked at the assembled commanders.
If you do not trust us now, Horus has struck an even keener blow than I had feared, said Korax, sensing the captain's continuing reluctance. Your reticence is starting to become tiresome, Captain. Are we wasting our time here?
Our primary focus is the fortification of Terra and the defense of the Sol system, Norris told them, pouring himself a drink.
He looked long at Korax and the commanders, and then gave a single unconscious nod, indicating that he was willing to trust them.
The turncoats on Mars are contained, their defection destabilizing our efforts rather than directly threatening them. With the loyal Mechanicum occupied with the enemy within their ranks, they can provide little support for our growing war effort.
Which is all very interesting. But we want to know what happened to other legions on Istvan. Who is left to fight Horus?
This was from Agapito.
I was hoping that you might know more than me on that account, confessed Norris. There has been scattered traffic returning from the system, a ship or two bearing survivors, but little else. We're not really sure what happened out there. As I said before, we had heard that the Raven Guard had been eliminated.
Though the news has proven false in that case, we must still assume for the moment that the Salamanders and Iron Hands have been wiped out, said Korax. Ferus Manus was slain, I saw as much myself, and nothing has been seen of Vulcan. It is likely that their legions were also destroyed. What of other loyal forces? How far has the taint spread to the Imperial Army? Any news from Gilliman, or Johnson, or the Khan?
I do not know, Norris said with a shrug. Nothing has been passed down to me from Legion Command. You would have to speak to Lord Dorne about that.
The Emperor? What is the Emperor doing? Asked Aloni. Surely he will lead the fight against Horus?
A pained look crossed the face of Norris.
We have heard nothing directly, said the captain,
placing his cup on the table in front of him.
Lord Dorne has been placed in charge of the Sol defense and the fortification of the Imperial Palace. Malkador appears to be acting as regent on Terra with the authority of the Emperor alongside the Primarch. We have been told that the Emperor is engaged fully in his own endeavors to defeat the traitors. Though what that means, I have no clue.
The Raven Guard commanders muttered shock and disapproval at this revelation until Korax stepped up to the table.
Quiet, said the Primarch.
He cast a stern look at the legionaries.
If the Emperor is embroiled in some unseen effort, we must trust that it is the surest road to victory. Do you think he would come out of the Imperial Palace, sword in hand, and cast down these traitors with a single blow? The Emperor created us to be his warriors, and we will bring him victory.
With further questioning, it became clear that Norris could furnish them with little more information, other than the ongoing defensive measures being undertaken. Jagatai Khan and his white scars were presumably en route to Terra, having been recalled from Chondax by Dorn himself, but no other communication had been received from them for some time. The First Legion, the Dark Angels, and a Lionel Johnson had not been heard from and were likely unaware of the recent treachery of Horus. Leman Russ and his Space Wolves were equally incommunicado, having been dispatched by the Emperor to deal with the problem of a Thousand Suns and their continuing sorceries many months before. The Ultramarines, largest of the legions, had been sent to the opposite side of the galaxy by Horus prior to the massacre, and were unlikely to be able to intervene any time soon. For the moment, the only legions that could be accounted for and depended upon were the Raven Guard and the Imperial Fists. The council ended with little learnt, but what small amount of intelligence Norris had passed on was far from comforting. The warp storms were, as Korax had suspected, widespread. Perhaps the whole galaxy was engulfed. Certainly the region around Istvan was cloaked in a massive tempest that blocked navigation and communication. It seemed increasingly likely that the warp disruption was part of Horus's strategy. The last time warp storms had raged like this, The worlds of mankind had been divided and isolated, leading to the onset of Old Night and the dissolving of the original human empire. Unable to unite properly, prevented from coordinating their strategy or enforcing loyalty to the Emperor, the disparate planets of the Imperium would be much easier pickings for the traitors. With a swift strike to secure power on Terra, Horus could emerge as a new uniter of humanity, sweeping away the rule of the Emperor at a stroke. The preparations for Terra's defense became more evident as the Avenger moved in-system towards Terra. The Sol battlefleet, the largest single armada in the Imperium, was gathering in strength. Dozens of warships blockaded Mars, while hundreds of other vessels took station in orbital positions over the other planets, their sensors turned outwards in readiness for the arrival of Horus's fleet. The communications networks were overloaded with activity. The StratNet frequencies used by the Legiones, Astartes, and Imperial Army sometimes so clogged with data that it took many hours for messages to be relayed. There was a tangible aura of desperation amidst the turmoil, as though any day would see the warp tearing apart with the arrival of hundreds of traitor ships. As they neared their destination, the Raven Guard encountered increasing numbers of security screens. Warship patrols hailed them frequently, while massive star forts locked their guns upon the arriving vessel, keeping watch until it had passed out of range. Passing further and further into the heart of the Sol system, the Avenger was subjected to constant scrutiny, though its passage was never barred outright. Gaining orbit over Terra was an expedition in itself. Despite the assurances and assistance of Captain Norris, after 3 days entangled in the security protocols of half a dozen different military jurisdictions and organizations, Korax finally lost patience. Dismissing the communications attendants from their posts, he keyed in a fail-safe code for the most secure channel, an ultra-secret frequency used only by the Primarchs and, before his self-seclusion on Terra, the Emperor himself. There was no reply for half an hour as Korax paced back and forth across the Strategium. Finally, the Vox crackled into life, with a voice that was deep and thoughtful, every word carefully enunciated, every syllable spoken with crisp authority. "Is that you, Korax? It is about time you contacted me, brother. I was wondering if the news that you are still alive had been yet another breakdown in communication." "Brother Rogel, yes, it is Korax," replied the Primarch. "If you do not find me an orbital station in the next 5 minutes, I'm going to use my weapons batteries to make a space for myself." There was a short but hearty laugh over the Vox.
"That would not be a good idea," said Rogel Dorn. "I heard that you had arrived, but then I must admit that your whereabouts were washed away in all of the other clutter. Do you want to berth at a platform or take up an independent orbit?"
"We need to resupply," said Korax. "I'll shuttle down with an advance guard."
"I will send you the coordinates of Beta Stick's platform. It has a fully stocked Vitaling yard. You can come down to Lionsgate Port, and I will dispatch a delegation to meet you."
"A delegation? Too busy to greet your brother in person?"
"Yes. I will be back at the Imperial Palace within the day."
"Understood, brother. I wish our reunion was in much lighter times."
"It is not for our kind to meet in peace, brother. You should know that. We will talk more tomorrow. I have something I must attend to. Urgently."
With that, the frequency devolved into static once more. A data screen flickered into life, a list of spatial coordinates scrolling across it in yellow lettering and signed with the insignia of the Imperial Fists.
"Prepare for docking maneuvers," Korax announced, "and ready me a Stormbird. Agapito, choose a company to act as honor guard. Bran, you have command."
A series of affirmatives chorused across the Strategium as the Primarch walked towards the doors. Korax stopped as they slid open and turned his head.
"Bran."
The commander froze, halfway into the control throne. He stood and looked back at the Primarch and saw a lopsided smile on Korax's face.
"Yes, Lord. As much as I appreciate your arrival at Istvan, please, stay where I put you this time."
Aye, Lord. I will.
As the Avenger powered towards the orbital dock, preparations were made for Korax and a small entourage to descend to the surface of Terra. Bran found Agapito on the launch deck with a company of his legionaries. The clatter of a heavy servitor's tracks echoed from the metal walls, blotting out the dormant whine of a Stormbird's engines. Bran thought he sensed some anxiety in his brother's demeanour.
Relax, brother. This is not a combat mission, said Bran.
And all the more dangerous for it, replied Agapito. Suspicion surrounds us like a cloud. You saw how Captain Norris treated us. I expect no warm welcome on the surface.
So it will be up to you to assure our allies that we can be trusted, said Bran.
Agapito hesitated and glanced over Bran's shoulder. Korax entered the flight bay, nodded to the two commanders, and strode up the Stormbird's boarding ramp without a word.
I'm not the only one that feels it,
said Agapito, his gaze on the dropship, his thoughts clearly on the Primarch, now aboard.
Now is not the time for rash displays of loyalty. I'm worried Lord Korax will promise more than we can currently deliver. We can't afford to let the traitors make their preparations without pause, said Bran. Would you want us simply to let them proceed as they wish?
Leaning closer, Agapito's voice dropped to a whisper.
We were nearly wiped out, brother, he said. If we do not tread carefully, the execution Horus planned for us at Istvan will be carried out at another place. You know that we lack the strength to fight at the moment.
Concerned by his brother's words, Bran slapped a hand to Agapito's shoulder guard.
What happened at Istvan is over, said Bran,
guessing the source of Agapito's hesitance.
We lost most of the Legion, but we survived.
We survived, brother. I don't remember you at the drop site.
Through no fault of my own,
snapped Bran, snatching back his hand. He was infuriated that of all his comrades, it was Agapito who had given voice to the accusation Bran had suspected lingered in the minds of his battle brothers.
How can I be held responsible for the drawing of lots that left me as garrison commander?
You misunderstand me, brother, said Agapito with a sorrowful shake of the head. It is not personal, but you can never understand what it was like to be there. I don't begrudge your absence. I envy it.
You haven't talked about the drop site at all, to me or the Primarch, said Bran,
his anger punctured by Agapito's confession.
Some of the others, they have found it helpful to discuss what they saw, to share their stories. Tell me, what happened to you at the drop site?
No,
said Agapito, stepping away. He signalled to his warriors to begin boarding as the launch bay lights dimmed in readiness for the main doors to open. Overhead, klaxons sounded the 5-minute warning.
Some stories are best left untold. You do not want to know what I did at the drop site.
Bran said nothing as his brother turned away, confused by the change he had seen in Agapito. His fellow commander had once been the first to swap war stories on the ship back to Deliverance, taking great delight in recounting his kills and close calls with death. Even as young boys, when they had fought for the liberty of Deliverance, before the Emperor had come and brought the Legion, Agapito would rouse the flagging spirits of the freedom fighters with tales of his daring and their victories over the Kievaran enslavers. He watched as Agapito stood at the bottom of the ramp, counting off the squads as they ran into the Stormbird amid the thunderous falls of boots on metal. As the last of the legionaries passed him, Bran noticed something on their shoulder guards, a small device painted under the Legion symbol. It was a grey skull, almost as dark as the black of their armour. Now that he noticed it, Bran saw it in the insignia of all the company's warriors. He waved aside one of the squad leaders as he jogged past.
Sergeant Nestil, a word, said the commander.
Yes, Captain,
said Nestil, coming to attention in front of Bran.
What does this mean?
Asked Bran, prodding a finger towards the small sigil.
Istvan veteran, Captain,
replied the sergeant with no hint of reluctance.
There was no official campaign badge or honours issued, Captain. We thought it would be good to remember the fallen.
You have all taken this on, said Bran.
All of us that fought there, yes, Captain, at least in the Talons,
said Nestil. He glanced towards Agapito, and Bran took his meaning.
Whose idea was this?
Asked Bran.
I am not sure, Captain,
admitted Nestil. He looked away, glancing again at Agapito.
It was just one of those ideas that seemed to catch on.
Sorry to delay you, Sergeant, said Bran, waving Nestil to carry on. Not good, thought Bran as he watched Agapito follow Nestil up the ramp onto the Stormbird. A commander being close-lipped about what he had done, and legionaries giving themselves honours. The Dropsite massacre had caused serious damage to the Raven Guard, even more than the 75,000 dead legionaries. Strapped into his berth beside one of the viewing ports, Alpharius had a good view of Terra as the Stormbird dipped away from the Avenger. It had been a fortunate turn to be included in Korax's honour guard and would provide, he hoped, a good opportunity to see the defences being prepared to welcome Horus. Aside from whatever else he might be asked to do, his role in the Raven Guard was to gather intelligence for the final, inevitable assault on the Emperor's stronghold. Everything he could learn now would give the War Master and his allies a valuable warning of what to expect. "What is that?" one of the legionaries asked from further down the compartment. Alpharius turned to see the other Raven Guard straining at their harnesses to look out of the starboard windows. "It's bigger than a star fort." Alpharius could not see clearly from his position, but glimpsed a massive vessel in low orbit. It seemed to stretch on and on, a gilded construction shaped like an eagle with outstretched wings, bedecked with fortified gun towers, lance batteries, missile tubes and bombardment cannons. So vast was the orbiting station, its faint shadow could be seen on the cloud layer wreathing Terra. The flicker of void shields surrounded the immense floating edifice, dappling the gold of its heavily buttressed superstructure with purple and red. Smaller ships, some of them mighty battleships in their own right, were dwarfed by its presence, its turret-encrusted docks large enough for cruisers several kilometres long.
"That's Phalanx," said Sergeant Nestil. "Base ship of the Imperial Fists. Impressive, isn't it? Never mind a battle barge. That's what we should have taken to Istvan."
It certainly was impressive, but no surprise. Everyone had heard of Phalanx, and its presence in the Sol system was to be expected. Horus was well aware of the Star Fortress's capabilities and defences already, and no doubt had devised a way to counter them. This was not the object of Alpharius's mission. Of more interest to the Alpha Legionnaire was a golden-hulled cruiser rising out of the dock neighbouring the Avenger. Though he was not sure, it looked like a vessel belonging to the Legio Custodes, the Emperor's elite protectors. He wondered where they were going when all other effort was being directed towards the defence of the Master of Mankind. And then everything outside turned white as the Stormbird dropped into the thickening Terran atmosphere, enveloping the craft in bright flames. As they descended, the visibility momentarily cleared, revealing a vista that sent a thrill through Alpharius. Large platforms could be half seen amongst the dense cloud, drifting serenely through the air, surrounded by swarms of shuttles and cargo lifters. The closest floating city, its name unknown to Alpharius, was glimpsed between breaks in the whiteness, a mass of towering buildings, winding roadways and landing aprons. Sunlight glittered from coiling spires made of multicoloured glass and dazzled across the mirrored plates of photoreceptors and vapour condensers. The splendour of graceful lines and arcing bridges was marred by blocky aberrations, gun towers and bunkers surrounded by scaffolding that was thick with workers. As the Stormbird banked onto its final course, Alpharius's augmented eyes could see flashes of yellow armour amongst the robes and overalls of the work teams, Imperial Fists supervising the construction of the defences. The nose of the Stormbird dipped, and cloud again swathed Alpharius's view, blotting out the vision of the hovering city. The engines whined as the craft slowed for its landing and banked once more, circling over the Lion's Gate starport that spread darkly across the bare rock of Terra's surface in a vast maze of ferrocrete and plasteel. Alpharius had a glimpse of landing platforms that stretched for kilometres, shadowed beneath control towers and defence laser turrets. The Alpha Legionnaire was glad that his arrival was in the guise of a friend, and wondered if, at some point of the future, he would be returning here as a foe. He had made dozens of combat drops during his long years of service, but seeing the immense barrels of the orbital defence cannons and the flicker of power fields,
He knew that whichever legion ultimately had the task of securing Lion's Gate would suffer heavy casualties. Even as he thought of the assault that was sure to come, Alfarius's mind was analysing the growing defences. Any insights he could glean from this opportunity to examine Dawn's fortifications firsthand might prove invaluable to Horus, and so in turn were of significant worth to the Alpha Legion. His eye caught the telltale capacitors and conduits of power field generators, while he calculated the zones of fire of the smaller rings of protective pillboxes and automated las cannon mounts. With a thud and a hiss of hydraulics, the Stormbird extended its landing gear, breaking Alfarius's thoughts. So engrossed had he been in his intelligence gathering, he had quite forgotten where he was. Alfarius took a deep breath as the Stormbird touched down, rocking slightly on its gear, clouds of smoke and plasma wash billowing around the craft. He was on Terra, the capital of the Imperium, home to the Emperor. As promised, there was a contingent waiting for the arrival of Korax. As the Primarch descended the Stormbird's ramp, he saw a group of 30 gold-armored custodians. In height and size, they were the match of the Legiones Astartes, if not bigger, though Korax was taller still. Every warrior of the custodian guard was armored uniquely, their heavy gorgets decorated with eagle devices, winged skulls and other icons, their high, conical helms topped with flowing scarlet crests. Clusters of studded red leather terugis hung from their belts and high shoulder guards, tipped with pointed gold weights, and their wide greaves and heavy vambraces were chased with intricate designs that matched the rest of their armor. They held guardian spears with red power field-clad blades held across their chests, carried behind tall shields emblazoned with designs of the imperial aquila and laurel-crowned skulls. With them stood an aging man Korax recognized immediately, Malkador the Sigillite. The regent of Terra wore a voluminous robe, unadorned in stark contrast to the ornamentation of his guard of honor. His weathered ancient face was half hidden behind the fold of his hood. The gusts of wind blowing across the open landing apron tugged at the rim of his hood, showing glimpses of reinforced pipes connected to a collar around the Sigillite's throat that disappeared into the swathe of his garments. In his hands, he held a black marble staff, taller than himself, its head a soaring eagle shaped in gold, wreathed in flames that sprang from the rod itself. The Emperor's regent leaned heavily on his staff of office, but nonetheless managed to maintain an air of statesmanlike authority. Malkador bowed his head in greeting, and Korax returned the gesture as his guard of honor filed into ranks behind him.
"I hope they are for ornamentation and nothing else," said Korax, directing a purposeful gaze at the armed custodians.
"Purely ceremonial, I assure you," replied Malkador. "I apologize for the formalities you have been forced to endure, but you understand that we cannot afford any laxity in our security in these times."
"It seems a Primarch's word is no longer his bond," said Korax as he stepped forwards, the custodians moving to form two lines of escort around him and Malkador, encircling the Primarch's entourage of Raven Guard.
"Only for some, Korax," said the Sigillite. "A number of your brothers remain true to their oaths of allegiance. Your loyalty is greatly appreciated."
The Primarch laughed, but there was no sign of humor in the Sigillite's expression. Malkador continued to talk as they walked from the landing apron.
"Rogel asked me to assure you that he will be joining us tomorrow, as he promised. We are very keen to hear everything you can tell us about Horus's forces, and perhaps what you think he intends to do."
"I can add little to the discussion," said Korax.
They passed under an arching silver gateway, 100 meters high, and headed down a ramp leading to a line of silver-hulled shuttlecraft. They looked like giant scarabs, with steel wings that fluttered under the vibration of idling engines.
"It sounds like there are other survivors."
"Of course," said Malkador,
waving for Korax to precede him onto the ramp of the closest atmospheric shuttle. Inside, the main compartment was furnished like an austere lounge, with low couches and tables on a carpeted deck. The walls covered with hangings depicting scenes from the Unification Wars. Korax assumed it was Malkador's personal transport. The Sigilite sat down on one of the long couches and instinctively waved a hand for Korax to do the same. The Primarch declined with a shake of his head, knowing that the furniture was totally unsuited to someone of his height and weight. He leaned against the bulkhead instead, head dipped beneath the shuttle roof.
"There are not only those like yourself who escaped the ambush," the Sigilite continued, "but also brave warriors who have recently arrived from within the traitor's ranks."
"And you can be sure of their loyalty? Misdirection and falsehood seem to be Horus's primary weapons at the moment."
"We are convinced of their continuing support for the Emperor," said Malkador. "They will have a very important role to play in the waging of the war to come."
"The war has started already, if you haven't noticed," growled Korax.
He had noticed Captain Norris using a similar turn of phrase, implying that somehow the massacre at Istvan had been an end point rather than a beginning. The two of them were alone in the shuttle, the custodians and legionaries being directed to the other transports. With a growl, the engines of the craft throttled to full, the hull trembling as the ornithopter's wings sprang into blurred life. The shuttle lifted quickly away from the starport and turned northwards, rising to clear a range of mountains that thrust up from the ground. The mountains were as much artifice as natural phenomena. Korax could see vast galleries and windows several stories high cut into the crags and ridges, betraying the labyrinthine structure hidden beneath the snow-capped peaks. Korax sensed Malkador studying him at length, but the two of them sat in silence for some time as the ornithopter sped over the mountains, shuddering slightly in the buffeting winds. Occasionally, the Primarch glimpsed one of the other shuttles through the oval windows, their shining fuselages glimmering against the white and grey of the sheer-sided peaks.
"And what is the opinion of the Emperor?" Korax asked, realizing that Malkador had yet to mention him specifically. "Dorn said that he had been placed in charge of the defence."
"The Emperor is very aware of the situation, and Dorn has his full support," replied the regent.
"That's it," said Korax. "His war master turns half the legions against him, and all he has to say is that Dorn has his full support."
"He is entirely absorbed in another matter, one which overshadows his thoughts even more than this distraction with Horus. If his current endeavour is successful, this rebellion will be short-lived."
"I have come to Terra to seek audience with the Emperor," said Korax.
He glanced out of the window and saw cranes and earth movers remodelling a massive shoulder of the mountain below, crafting immense revetments and fortifications from the naked rock. Swarms of thousands of labourers were at work.
"It is with regret that I must warn you. That is highly unlikely," said Malkador,
his gaze unwavering as Korax turned his stare back on the Sigilite.
"His current project requires all of his attention. I have seen him only a handful of times since we learned of the events at Istvan. Dorn has not spoken to him at all, receiving the Emperor's instruction only through me. I cannot give you any guarantee that our master will grant you an audience."
The firm expression on Malkador's face forestalled any further comment Korax might make on the matter. Though he did not say as much, the Primarch believed that he would be seen by the Emperor. No matter what Malkador said, there could be no endeavour so pressing that the Emperor could not find time to speak with one of his Primarchs at this dark hour. Then a thought occurred to him, which would explain why Malkador was being slightly evasive and seemed so convinced that Korax would not get an audience.
"The Emperor is aware of my arrival?" asked the Primarch.
"No," said Malkador. "I have been unable to contact him since you first entered the Sol system."
"Unable or unwilling?"
If Malkador took any offence at the question, he did not show it. His reply was calm, his face earnest.
"The Emperor wages a different sort of war to the ones you and I have ever seen," explained the Sigilite. "To attempt to contact him whilst on one of his expeditions would be to endanger his cause. When he has returned, he will be immediately informed of your presence, rest assured."
"You make it sound as if the Emperor is not on Terra."
As before, Malkador hesitated. Though Korax did not sense any duplicity in him, merely reluctance. The regent's thin fingers slowly tapped the haft of his staff as he contemplated his answer.
"That is not a thing I can easily quantify," said Malkador. "Forgive my vagueness, but I am not at liberty to discuss the Emperor's plans, nor am I in a position to fully comprehend them. It would be indiscreet, a betrayal of my position as regent, if I were to furnish you with information that the Emperor has not chosen fit to share with you himself."
What Malkador was saying unsettled Korax greatly. Ever since his return to Terra after the victory at Ulanor, the Emperor had shrouded himself in secrets, when once he had walked freely amongst his sons and shared his plans and visions. Malkador spoke with such a reverent tone that Korax was left in no doubt that the Emperor's current campaign was indeed very important. But the Sigilite's assurances that it was more worthy of attention than Horus's treachery rang hollow. The Imperium, the spreading of enlightenment, had been the Emperor's great scheme, and now it was all for nothing. Surely he would have to emerge from his cloistered endeavours to lead those still loyal to him. As the squadron of ornithopters swept along a high-sided valley, Korax wondered what he would do if he could not speak with the Emperor. After the debacle at Istvan, the Primarch was not sure of anything, including his ability to effectively command. He needed the Emperor's guidance now more than ever, and the thought of returning to Deliverance without seeing his Gene Father filled him with a subtle dread. With Primarch turning on Primarch, Korax wanted to bend his knee to the Emperor once more and assure him of the loyalty of the Raven Guard. The flight up into the mountains took the Raven Guard past the burgeoning fortifications being erected under the leadership of Dorn. The scale of the endeavour was vast, larger than anything Korax had witnessed before, and he had seen the rebuilding of worlds shattered by his legion. The mountains themselves were being shaped into great bastions, carved by explosive charges and monolithic machines into buttresses and keeps, curtained walls and towers. The shadows of the ornithopters flitted over many tracked cargo haulers in convoys kilometres long, bringing loads of ferrocrete and adamantium, ceramite and thermoglass, plasteel and diamatite. With them came cranes with booms half a kilometre long and shovel-fronted earth movers the size of tenement blocks. Snaking multi-compartment crawlers edged along newly laid roadways, their cargo more workers to join the hundreds of thousands already labouring on the upper slopes. These caravans were in turn supplied by forage trucks and water tankers numbering in the hundreds. Everywhere was seen the blazon of the Imperial fists and the splash of their golden livery.
"My brother does not take half measures," said Korax, looking across the cabin to Malkador.
The regent roused himself from a half-slumber and glanced out of the window, barely interested by the gargantuan effort laid out below.
"A wall unmanned is no defence against attack," said the Sigilite. "If Horus's forces were to strike now, who would hold the ramparts and gates?"
"I thought the White Scars were headed for Terra."
"Jagatai Khan was ordered to return with his legion, but we have had no contact with the White Scars since the warp storms began anew."
Korax absorbed this news in silence, still looking at the edifice taking shape around him. Peaks were being toppled, the material thus created used to erect walls closing off the passes and valleys between. Huge lifters, powered by dozens of rotors and thrusters, hovered over the veils, carrying generators and building-sized capacitors to new defence laser silos. The barrels of these weapons were transported on flatbeds 100 meters long, over bridges and through tunnels carved from naked rock. Within this growing outer cordon, the activity was less frenetic. Here and there a slope was broken by high gallery windows or the curving front of an embrasure. Roadways disappeared into dimly lit passages, and forests grew around flattened landing pads. These were the outer reaches of the old palace, first raised up by the Emperor as the Great Crusade began. Buildings, fashioned in layout to appear as imperial aquilas from above, clustered atop a peak to the east. To the west, down a winding valley, hundreds of square kilometres were covered with huge wind farms, powering the cities hidden beneath, each fan 300 meters high. Ahead were the tallest mountains, still silhouettes against the sky. One of the floating sky platforms had been brought down to dock, a 30-kilometer-wide city jutting from the side of the mountain like a balcony, resting on a maze of piles and girders stretched between two summits. The shuttles banked away, turning more to the west, where the sun was setting behind jagged peaks. The last rays of sunlight glinted on golden arches and pearlescent towers, stark against the blues and purples of the dusk. After several hours, the shuttles reached a cavernous dock set into the side of a mountain, whose peak had been flattened and replaced by a sprawl of jutting antennae and communications dishes. An immense pillar stood to each side of the kilometre-wide opening, carved with lightning bolt designs that forked between rising, turning columns of eagles. Swallowed up by the dark interior of the shuttle port, the ornithopter's lights flickered on inside and out, strobing navigation lights illuminating row after row of craft on the wide landing apron beneath. Korak saw thunderhawks and stormbirds, plus dozens more of the ornithopters. There were larger craft, too, slab-sided harbinger dropships in the varied colours of many Imperial Army regiments. Into this vast dockyard descended the craft carrying Korax's warriors, spiralling down after each other before scattering to their allotted landing spaces. The Primarch glanced towards Malkador with a frown.
"Accommodation has been made for your legionaries," said Malkador. "They will be well catered for."
The Sigilite shuttle did not land amongst them, however, the pilot steering it up towards a much smaller opening, a little below the vaulted roof of the port. Rising towards this tunnel, the shuttle's lights passed over gallery after gallery overlooking the port. The area was strangely deserted, a city delved from millions of inhabitants who were now absent. The thrum of the ornithopter's wings echoed in the immense hollow, interrupted by no other sound. Passing into an opening between the legs of another carved eagle, the ornithopter followed a narrow channel for several hundred metres until it came to land in a circular chamber situated at the heart of the mountain. Its walls were of plain-dressed stone, showing the striations of the mountain rock. A single door led from the docking site, fashioned from bronze, embossed with two crossed lightning bolts beneath an armoured fist. With a whine of decreasing power, the shuttle's wings settled, and Malkador's craft lurched to a halt on the stone floor. The doorway opened with a rush of escaping air, and immediately Korax detected an atmosphere far thinner than at ground level. Malkador led the Primarch out of the shuttle, seemingly unaffected by the low oxygen content in the air.
"If you will follow me, I will show you to the quarters that have been set aside for you, while your warriors will be garrisoned close at hand."
The door opened at the Sigilite's approach, Korax hearing the faintest buzz of a communications connection emitted from Malkador's staff. Beyond, steps led steeply downwards into the bowels of the Imperial Palace. Watching the gold-armoured figures of the Legio Custodes advancing ahead of him, Alpharius could not help but measure himself against them. Physically, they did not seem to be any more impressive than a legionary, though certainly their armour and weapons seemed to be individually fashioned, something only a captain might expect in the legions. He had heard before that each warrior was also a product of unique effort, as handcrafted by the Genhancers and Tech Serfs as his war gear was by artisans of the Mechanicum. Since he had gunned down several salamanders at the drop site, he had been confident that the Alpha Legion were the match of any in the Legiones Astartes. But it was not until he had been confronted by the ranks of the Custodian Guard that he had contemplated fighting against the Emperor's other servants. There was some idle chatter from the other Raven Guard as they followed the Custodians deeper into the Imperial Palace. Korax and Malkador had left them not far from what Alpharius assumed was the Sigilite's private shuttle chamber, another little nugget of intelligence to pass on, and they had descended through 46 floors in a gigantic elevator to the barracks level. The upper parts of the palace had been ornate, fashioned from marble, stone and obsidian, hung with banners and paintings of scenes from before the Unification Wars. Alpharius had seen depictions of old cities with onion-domed towers and ruined pyramids jutting from desert, rivers flowing in swift torrents over wide falls, and landscapes of green pastures. Nothing of those times remained, except for these pictures. The beauty of ancient Terra had long ago succumbed to millennia of pollution and war. After leaving the elevator, the Raven Guard had been brought into an area far more functional and austere in appearance. The walls were of rough ferrocrete, covered by plain whitewash. The long dorms that opened out through arches on either side of the corridor were empty, and the smell of fresh paint and residual particles of rock dust still in the air indicated that they had been newly built, no doubt to house more defenders in the future. There was little enough to report at the moment, but Alfarius kept his eyes and ears open for anything that might be of value. It was impossible to tell how deep within the mountain they were. There were no windows, the light provided by endless glowing stripes set into the ceiling and walls, the air coming through ventilator housings, too small to allow entry or exit, except perhaps by a child. The only way in or out was through the doors at each end of the main corridor, a defensive measure in all likelihood, but it also made for an effective prison. There was some discontented muttering amongst those Raven Guard who had been raised in the cells of Lycaeus, but this was stilled by a few words from the sergeants. The leader of the custodian guard stopped and pointed with his spear to an archway on the left, beyond which was a dormitory housing several hundred beds in long lines. There were lockers and shelves, as well as weapons racks and armor stands. Everything was proportioned for legionaries, larger and more robust than the furniture required by normal men.
"Remain here," the custodian leader said sharply, his voice coming through the grill of his helm, tainted by an external emitter. "Food and drink will be brought to you. There are drill rooms suitable for close-quarters weapons practice at the southern end of the hall." His spear tip pointed further down the corridor. "And should you wish to conduct live firing exercises, you will be taken to an appropriate part of the facility."
"And how will we contact you?" asked Commander Agapito, his voice conveying his displeasure at this abrupt treatment.
"We are here to escort our Primarch, not lounge around down here with you for company."
"Lord Korax is under constant watch, be sure of that," replied the custodian, his metal-edged voice betraying no hint of whether that was for the Primarch's safety or other reasons.
"You will be assigned a secure communications frequency. You may make full use of the barracks and its attached facilities, but you are not authorized to move beyond the southern and northern extents of this hall. Failure to abide by these restrictions will result in summary execution."
"Nice to be trusted," said Agapito.
The custodian turned his head towards the Raven Guard commander, bringing the black lenses of his helm to focus on the legionary.
"Trust is a depleted resource, Commander. There will be no exceptions. I have been given personal authority over your stay here. I am Arcatus Vindic Centurio. All communications will be directed through me. My companions are not authorized to communicate with you, so save both your time and theirs by sparing them any questions or complaints. I will return in 1 hour to conduct a full security briefing."
The custodian guard filed out through the gigantic locked door at the end of the corridor, leaving the Raven Guard to their own devices. Squad by squad, the quarters were allocated. Alfarius found his squad assigned bunks close to the corridor, but he did not entertain any thoughts of sneaking out for further investigation. His Primarch had made it clear that he was to remain undiscovered at all costs until the full nature of his mission had been revealed. He was not going to risk exposing himself to go on a sightseeing jaunt under the noses of the custodians. When the legionaries had ordered the dormitory to their liking, stowing weapons and other gear on the racks bolted to the walls, Agapito called the company to attend him.
"I know this is all quite strange, and those custodian guard are stiffer than a dead man's fingers, but this is the situation, and we must deal with it," said the commander. "When we have communications access, I will signal Avenger that we have arrived, and I will parley with Arcatus to arrange a suitable routine. I don't know how long we will have to stay here, so let's just keep alert and wait for the Primarch's orders."
There being little point in staying in combat readiness, the Raven Guard aided one another with the removal of their armour, each legionary stripping down to bodysuits and robes. Normally such assistance would be provided by the Legion's army of non-augmented attendants, but there was no such personnel available here. Despite the apparent security of their barracks, a watch rota was drawn up, and the squads allocated shifts on duty. A lifetime of routine and discipline could be quickly eroded by periods of inactivity, and Agapito was not going to allow any laxity to grow in the minds of his warriors. As Arcatus had promised, attendants arrived with food, which was brought to the dining area in the chamber on the opposite side of the main passage. The serfs came and left in silence,
obviously under orders not to fraternize with the legionaries in any way. They were all middle-aged men and women, wearing identical white jackets, embroidered with the aquila of the emperor, baggy black trousers, and slippers of the same thick material, their faces edged with polite indifference from years of experience. Alfarius was able to loiter in the passageway for a little while and had a look past the sealed door at the end of the corridor when the attendants were leaving. As he suspected, beyond lay another chamber and another locked door. There certainly would not be any way to slip out through there. He rejoined his squad and sat down at the long table, taking a welcome lungful of steam that was rising from the roast meats laid on platters before each legionary. Fresh fruit and vegetables were heaped in bowls along the length of each table, along with an assortment of other foodstuffs. After many days of ship's rations, it certainly was a feast. There were harsher conditions in which he might have found himself trapped, and as Alfarius ripped a leg from some giant poultry bird in front of him, he considered this one of the less arduous duties he had been asked to perform for the Legion.